Good afternoon, this is Tanya Schultz with Social Chats Locals. I'm live streaming with my co-host, Maria de Los Angeles, also known as Vice Queen Maria on Twitter. Hey Maria, how are you?
I'm great, Tanya, how are you?
I'm good, I've had better days. I just thought it would be a good idea to, dust or something. I don't know, somehow I feel so raspy with my voice. So today you're going to be doing most of the talking. I hope you don't mind.
Well, and we have a lot to talk about today, Tanya, because, you know, I'm just coming back from the tarpon fishing experience, and I'm very happy to have Lou Hastings on the show, although the reason why we have him on is not so happy. There's a huge controversy about the types of tarpon fishing that are taking place in the Gulf Coast and other, assuming other places in Florida. So we'll be discussing that with him at length.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on in the ocean. I don't know if you... There's a lot... I retweeted one of his picture that on Twitter, so I want to talk to him about that too. But how was your fishing trip?
Oh, it was just amazing.
It looked amazing.
Such a great time being an observer for 2 days on the boat, and then getting to know all of the great folks who live on Boca Grande or are part of that fishing community. Not everybody lives on that island, but. And then I actually got to fish myself on Sunday, the ladies' tournament, and I did not catch anything, but it was still wonderful.
You look so cute with your outfit.
What was that?
I said, you look so cute with your outfit on, your fishing outfit.
Oh, yeah. I really protected my skin. Tanya, you should be proud of me.
I was.
I came out none the worse for wear, no sunburn, and it's as if I hadn't been on the sun at all. And also, I stayed very cool and comfortable because that wicking fabric is just perfect for Florida.
Yeah,
you know, you can sweat and or get wet and it will dry up right away and the fabric breathes, but it still protects your skin. So it's not like cotton that'll, you know, stick to your skin.
Mm-hmm.
If it gets wet, it's kind of like heavy. So it's amazing how comfortable that is.
I wish I
could wear those clothes all the time, actually. You know, hot.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what type of fabric is that? What type of fabric are they called?
You know what? I'm not really sure. I know, like, the shirt that I was wearing was manufactured by a local company called Dry Freak.
Okay.
But I know, like, for example, the pants I was wearing are by Ex Officio, and then it's like a really soft, silky fabric. Very comfortable, but it's very breathable. And I think I bought those actually in Key West at a local fishing and tackle shop.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make a lot of fishing clothes for women, which is something that I kind of big pet peeve of mine. And but they also have some of these outdoor companies make dresses and shirts and skirts and things that she travels.
Yeah.
They're a similar fabric, and I mean, you can just throw them in a sink with a little woolite and just, you know, rinse them, and then boom, they're dry, like, within an hour, and you can just put them on again. Like, so it's very practical, you know, if you're doing this kind of fishing thing, especially in the tropics.
Maria, tell me the name of the clothing company again. I'm going to look it up real quick.
It's, well, my pants, the shirt was Dry Freak.
Dry Freak, okay.
And the pants were Ex Officio, E-X-O-F-F-I-C-I-O.
Hold on a second,
Tanya,
okay? Hold on 2 seconds, hold on. Hi, this is Tanya Maria. We're on Social Chats. You're live.
Hi, this is Lou calling from the Boca Grande Chamber of Commerce.
Hi, Lou.
Hi, Lou. Welcome.
How are you?
Hello.
Thank you.
Welcome.
How are you ladies doing today?
We're great, and we're glad to have you on the show.
Tanya's a
little under the weather.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry to hear that, Tanya.
Yeah, I never get sick, actually. This is just, I got something on my chest, so I'm going to kick it. So, Maria says she's going to take over, but in the meantime, your area is so beautiful. I didn't even know you guys existed. I'm looking at
your website.
Yeah, I was like, whoa.
Tanya, I absolutely fell in love with the Book of Grand. I mean, it's just so gorgeous, and it's so laid back, and, like, nothing happens there, which is, like, the good thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's awesome.
And it seems like a really tight-knit community. You have your seasonal residents, of course. But there's, like, one great restaurant called The Temptation, and everybody knows each other. I mean, by the time I left, everyone knew who I was. And I got to meet many great locals. So, and it's just gorgeous. It's just...
I'm on your website, Lou, and see, I live in Boca Raton, so that's why when she said Boca Grande, I was like, I don't know if there's a Boca Grande around here.
That's the other Boca.
Yeah.
Tanya, it's very different, although there's a lot of wealth, you know, the homes are quite cranky and expensive, most of them. But it's very, very different. I mean, you will not see a pair of high heels anywhere.
No leopard skin?
Flip-flops. Nice flip-flops. Uh-huh. There's not even one traffic light, and you get around in golf carts.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was glad, Maria, that you you hung around for an extra day. Talk about total immersion in your story and your subject. I was glad to see that you did that because it gave you an opportunity to look around a little bit more when you didn't have something that you had to do, like be a part of the tournament. So I thought that was neat, and thank you for hanging around.
Oh, it was my pleasure, you know, and I really feel also I felt like I needed, as fun as the tournament was, you know, you need a little downtime to kind of, so, because I was actually working every day, you know, even though I was covering the story, I'd come to town in the afternoon, but I had great Wi-Fi at the hotel and I had to post some things. And so on that day that I stayed, I did a little bit of work and then I was like, I'm done. I'm taking the rest of the day off.
And rightly so. You should have. So that's great. I'm glad you got the opportunity to do that.
So getting to the real topic that we really want to focus on today is, well, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, and your role in the Tarpon Tournament.
Okay. Well, I am the Executive Director of the Boca Grande Chamber of Commerce and have been since February of 2011. So I've had a little bit of time in this office. I do live on the island, so it makes it quite convenient, and I have been an island resident for 3 years now, you can say that I have a vested interest in the success and promotion of the business community here, as well as, you know, I have the residents in mind as well, so it's kind of a unique vantage point. And as far as the tournament is concerned, we are the tarpon capital of the world, and there have been tarpon tournaments here for years. And in fact, the Chamber of Commerce holds their annual Ladies' Day tournament that is sponsored by the Chamber and put on by the Chamber. And this year was our 22nd year, so this year was no different. However, we used to do the World's Richest Tarpon Tournament, which began in 1983. And they actually went on hiatus from putting this on in 2005 for a myriad of reasons. But, you know, it is a lot of work, number one. And there were other things that the chamber could concentrate on. And when I got into the office, I just looked around and said, you know, what great history. And, you know, looking at the economics of it, what a great economic generator. So why not bring this tournament out of hiatus and bring it back to life? And that's what we did this year on its 30th anniversary. So it was real neat.
Now, so tell us a little bit about what was different, though, this year regarding conservation and the different types of tarpon tournaments that we have in the state of Florida.
Sure. This year was very different from past World's Richest because it used to be the biggest fish won. So you weighed your catches and, you know, you put it up on a weigh scale and he who had the largest fish at the end of the tournament was the winner. Which there are a lot of tournaments like that across the country. You can do bass tournaments and redfish and you name it, and it's usually the biggest fish. But for this particular fishery, you know, the more we learn about tarpon, one of those mysterious fish, those prehistoric fish, if you will, the more we learn that the days of harvesting or putting in harm's way these fish should be over. We should not be weighing these fish. They live up to 80 years old, first of all, and they are slow to mature. So, you know, you've got a recipe for disaster if you have these fish ending up dead after these tournaments. So the conservation aspect of bringing back the world's richest was, let's eliminate the weigh-in completely so we're not dragging this fish to a weigh scale. And usually, unfortunately, those are the biggest fish are the pregnant, roe-filled females. So you've kind of got a double jeopardy going on there. So we eliminated the weigh-in, and we did an all release. So if your team caught and released safely the most fish, you win. You're the best fisherman, and that's really how it should be. So that was the difference. And then we wanted to add an educational component to tell people why it's important that we need to save this fishery. Now, what does it mean as far as this you know, keeping this fish healthy and the fishery healthy? But not only that, the economics of it, what recreational fishing brings, not only to Florida, but in particular Southwest Florida, and tarpon fishing in general. So we had a lot of different reasons to do it that way. So we needed to educate people as to why it was important and why this area is so important for tarpon.
Well, let's backtrack a little bit, and thank you, Lou, for that explanation. But so for our readers who don't fish and don't understand how tournaments work, when you have a weigh-in, that means that you actually, once you cast the fish and you have it hooked, you actually drag it behind your boat or on the side of your boat to a weigh station where they put it on the sling where they weigh the fish. And this is actually very stressful to the fish's body. So by not having to do a weigh-in, you eliminate the step. And I was actually on as an observer on about 2 days for the World's Richest. And the deal was that the captain of the boat would release the fish immediately. You don't even have time to take a picture, really. So that you can hopefully remove the hook. And if not, the fish, they use a cheap hook and it will rust out on the fish's mouth, pretty quickly. So that's an important distinction, right there. But tell us then what happens in the other kinds of tournaments. Besides the weigh-in, there's a different style of fishing because what we did in World's Richest was we would attach a life bait to a hook and kind of let it float in either 40 to 60 feet of water. The captain would tell you. There's a little green and red thread attached to the line. And he would say green to the reel, which means let the line out until it sees the green thread on the reel. And it kind of floats there. But so tell us what happens with the jig fishing, which is the other style.
Yes, a jig is essentially a weighted hook. And while it looks like bait, it is really just a weighted hook. It's a hook with a weight on the bottom. And you are dropping this down directly into a thick pot of fish. And then when you reel it up, you're gonna catch something more often than not with that. So unlike presenting the bait and drifting through the Boca Grande Pass, for example, you are actually going right up on top of where the fish are and dropping this weighted hook into the middle of them. So that is the difference.
When you used the term earlier when I spoke with you that it's like shooting fish in a barrel.
It's tough to miss. Especially in Boca Grande Pass, it is one of the deepest natural channel in the state of Florida, and it's also a very narrow channel. So every spring, you know, bait fish and crabs come rushing through that channel, and the tarpon come back here to feed, to gain strength to go offshore and spawn. So this is where they come to eat. And Charlotte Harbor happens to be a natural nursery for tarpon. So they continually come back. With all of the research that they've done over the last 9 years, they're actually finding where these fish are going to. They're finding their migration patterns, and they're finding that they're coming back here year after year after year. And such a long-lived fish, the same fish could be returning to this estuary 50 times in its lifetime.
And we know this because of the tagging studies, right?
Correct. And the DNA genetic study testing that the FWC does, and places like Mode Marine and Bonefish and Tarpon Trust, all of those places, and the University of Miami are doing these studies. So,
and what that means is for our readers who don't know that some fishing captains or even the average Joe who goes fishing, sometimes they get these kits where they can actually swab parts of the tarpon that they catch for DNA, or they can actually tag the fish. And it's some kind of, I don't know, technical thing, GPS or satellite, but they track the fish somehow. And this is how they know that they return. And the Boca Grande area is actually relatively pristine. I mean, it's, you know, you don't have a beach with condos on it. I mean, you know, like high rises. There's actually a park, isn't there, on the other side of Charlotte Harbor?
That's correct. Yeah.
So the fish would be attracted there. I mean, I can totally see that. There's a great natural environment with Cayo Costa around there, and you know, all these other beautiful islands that are in that area that are undeveloped or barely developed. So it's a perfect place for nurseries.
Absolutely, and they're actually, the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust and the Lemon Bay Conservancy are actually trying to rehabilitate and purchase areas that can create a larger tarpon habitat or tarpon nursery, if you will, because in the state of Florida, according to recent studies, we've determined that we've lost about 50% of our mangroves, and that's what the tarpon use to protect themselves from predation while they're getting to that maturity where they can reproduce, which, like I said, is a long process. We're looking at 10 or 11 years. So, you know, that's a long time to stay alive.
So what you were telling me earlier that, so what happens in the spring, like this tarpon frenzy, right? They're actually, you described it as a kind of like the place where they go pick up. It's like a nightclub, and all the male and female tarpons are kind of checking each other out and saying like, okay, I want to spawn with you.
Essentially, yeah, that was one of our local captains who described it to me that way, and I thought that was a great way to remember it. It's like the tarpon nightclub. You know, they come here and they eat and they mingle, and the males actually bang up against the females to help them produce the egg production before they go offshore to spawn. So in essence, it is the Tarpon nightclub, and that's what happens in Boca Grande Pass. And it's a very, very unique place that you will not find tarpon stacked up to 40 feet deep in one place. So it is the one place that style of fishing, that jig, will work, because you won't find tarpon stacked up 40 feet deep anywhere else.
Well, that's almost like bottom fishing.
Correct.
You know, we're just dropped a sled down there. Of course, in bottom fishing, you know, if you're going for grouper or snapper, you usually have a bait. But if you're spending a light, hit bottom and then reel it up a little bit, and like, it sounds like you're like hitting the fish on the head.
That's exactly right. And you know, these fish will get agitated and swipe at it. I mean, Maria, fortunately, you were there to see firsthand. These fish are jumping out of the water and they're thrashing about and they're shaking their head. And, you know, a lot of them will shake that hook loose. You know, makes for a spectacular, you know, it's game fishing, it's sport fishing. But you can do it responsibly, or you can do it to the detriment of the fishery.
Well, tell us then, you were out on the water for the professional tarpon tournament series. You posted some pictures on Twitter that were very disturbing.
Yeah.
Were you taking the pictures yourself when you were out on the boat, or were there other people sharing those photos?
There were others that were sharing those photos. I did not. However, I have secured transportation for myself out on the water so that I can experience it firsthand. But I have experienced the tarpon washing up on the shore here. The state park workers and representatives of the state park here are assigned this terrible task of burying these tarpon every single year. And you know, this doesn't happen during regular tarpon fishing, during the guiding period. You rarely will see a tarpon wash up on shore or be floating. And it's because of the extra stress that is put on the fishery during this period. The weighing of the fish, the dragging it to the weigh scale, and then you're dragging it to the beach, and then you're lifting it out of the water to take pictures, you know, and by the time this poor fish is released, it's exhausted, it's stressed out, and, you know, if it doesn't get eaten by a shark, it goes belly up.
And just for our listeners who don't understand the geography, it's an island, so it's a barrier island, but it has a bend on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And so if people can just think of it like a little peninsula, really, that the path is there, and then all these fish are kind of what you saw in the pictures show yesterday. They're washing up on the sand along this bend and along the coast of the island. And you know, what you're saying is that's atypical.
That's correct.
I mean, because a tarpon might die, of course, just even from natural causes and wash up. But
sure.
But one of the things you said in the pictures was that the fact that the sharks aren't even eating them.
Right. One of the local captains that I spoke to a few months back gave me a very sobering thought, and that was that if you do see tarpon washing up on shore or floating, that means that even the sharks can't eat anymore. So if you're seeing those, how many more have been eaten by the sharks that we haven't even seen? And trust me, the sharks are there waiting.
Yeah, that's the only real natural predator for tarpon, isn't it?
For sure, in this area.
Well, for a large tarpon, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And just so our listeners know that sometimes when you actually have a tarpon on the hook, the shark might actually come and eat the fish that's on your hook.
And that's
true of a lot of fish. It's not just tarpon and shark. It's I mean, I've had alligators chase my fish in the Everglades. So
sure.
Animals are smart, and they will learn these behaviors if they can get a free meal. So, but if the, like, you're right, if the shark aren't even eating.
Right. When the sharks are full, then you know that there's a real, you know, what haven't you seen? What is below the surface that you, how much damage really is there? So, I mean, it's a sad commentary, you know? So the best that we can do is document it so that people can actually see it. I had a couple of people actually respond to my posts last night and said, how come I don't, this is the first I'm hearing about this. And, I mean, there's a myriad of reasons. Probably, we haven't used social media as effectively as we can now, or have in the past. And, I mean, certainly the people here have been jumping up and down and screaming at the top of their lungs, you know, look what's happening, look what's happening. But, you know, when the TV cameras are turned off, and everybody goes home, and they don't have that, that job of burying these tarp, and they don't get to see that part. And it's not exciting. What's that?
Where do they bury them?
Well, they're buried on the beach, and they go back into the ecosystem. Of course, the crabs and the birds, you know, will have something to eat, so.
Now, the professional tarpon tournament series actually gets televised, right?
It does.
I've seen it on, like, it's on the Sun Sports channel, and maybe it has, like, I guess it has more broadcast exposure.
They're in several million homes, so people do get to see it, and you know they see a very exciting sport fishing tournament, but they're not getting the full story, of course, as no show would be able to give you. You don't see all the sides.
So tell our listeners a little bit more about what other activities, ancillary activities you had with the tournament. Even if you weren't on the water, like the little downtown fair, you had Bolton James sing a great song about saving it for the kids, which was a kind of a tournament theme song that was in combination with Guy Harvey, who's a great conservationist. And you also had a Guy Harvey truck there. Tell us a little bit more about that.
It was actually unplanned how we did this year, and I probably should admit that. I should probably just take the accolades and say that this was a brilliant engineering idea undertaken by me personally, but it was not. Captain Sandy Melvin put together the kids tournament that we had on Saturday the 19th, and all of that money went to benefit Moffitt Cancer Research Center. So all of your entry fees went to that, and I believe they presented a check for $27,000 to Moffitt Cancer Research Center. And we had our 22nd annual Ladies' Day tournament, as I said, which normally falls on Mother's Day weekend. But for the last 3 years, unfortunately, the ladies didn't have much luck catching fish, so we decided to push that a week later. So that kind of landed it next to the kids' tournament. And then when we decided to...
And that's because of the natural fact of the migration. Right.
It was actually last year was a cold front moved in the night before, and the tarpon that were there, you know, were chased out by that. So here we come with our 21st annual Ladies' Day tournament, and the poor ladies were out there and didn't catch a thing all day. So I mean, that was the luck of the draw. There was nothing you could do there, but they basically schedule these tournaments around tides. So the tides were right this year for this particular weekend. And like I said, once we added the world's richest to the mix, they were dates that the Boca Grande Fishing Guides had already established for their tournament that what they would have done this year. But instead they came to the chamber and said, you know, will you take this back over? Because they kind of picked up the ball on the world's richest. They just didn't call it the world's richest after the chamber stopped having it. They called it the Boca Grande Fishing Guides Invitational. So when they came to me last year and said, will you take this back? And I said, yes, but we're going to call it the world's richest. Those dates had already been set. So here's your perfect storm of Thursday, Friday with the world's richest, the kids Saturday and the ladies Sunday. So it only made sense to put a festival around that. So we had a downtown festival where we had Moat Marine Laboratory and Aquarium bring down their mobile exhibit and touch tank for the kids because we wanted to have that educational component because their three main tenets was conservation, education, and sportsmanship, and that added to our education. We had some movies playing in the local auditorium here that were produced for PBS about fishing in Florida and about tarpon. We had Dr. Ken Lieber from Moat Marine, a senior scientist, come down and give a lecture during the day. We had kids' games that were put on by Lee County Parks and Recreation. We had a fantastic art festival with about 65 or so artists that were handpicked with marine theme art. All set up downtown. We blocked off the streets. We got permits to do that through Lee County. And then we had our musical guests, which included national recording artist Colton James. So we had a lot going on, for sure.
Well, I was there for all of that, and the festival was great. You know, it's not just to the listeners. No, this is a very small downtown. It's very quaint and cute. And it was just a few blocks. But some of the art and the jewelry was gorgeous. I mean, it was very, like, quite, you know, tasteful, and it wasn't just like art being crafty, you know. A lot of work was really great. And then Colton James himself, I'm not really into country music, so I was not familiar with his work. But he had a beautiful voice. And he also participated. I mean, he was on a boat when I was on a boat, and we were like, I could see him, and his song of Save It for the Kids, which is a very heartfelt song of, I think it's about his daughter or a child saying, you know, what happens to the fish when they die, it's a really, really beautiful song about saving the oceans and the marine environments, and rivers, and everything for future generations. So.
Yeah, it was actually that is the theme song for the Guy Harvey Ocean Foundation, and I mean it was Colton's brainstorm, and they said absolutely, and he wrote that with a songwriter named Kim Tribble, who's written many, many hits. And. And if I could rattle them off, you would know so many of them. Even if you didn't know country music, I can't think of them off the top of my head. But trust me, you would recognize just about every one of them. And the words speak to the mission of the Guy Harvey Ocean Foundation. It was the unofficial theme for us as well, so we were glad to have them. And yeah, that just by some stroke of luck. He was invited out onto a boat for the second day of competition, and he ended up on the boat that won it all, on the Tracy Lynn. So that was remarkable. I mean, you can't write that stuff or make it up.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, Lou, that for something that was unplanned, you pulled it off masterfully. You really did have to say that, you know.
I know, I should have kept that part a secret, but no.
No, but I appreciate your humility. You know, But no, really, I mean, it all fell into place quite beautifully.
It did.
And it was very moving to be, standing in front of the stage when the awards were given out. And especially, like, even on the kids' day, I wasn't part of that fishing experience, but I got to interview the kids' team that won. And they were just so, a little camera shy. But there was even a young lady on that. So there were young women fishing, and that got me excited. And I love that whole thing. It was just so, I hate to use the term warm and fuzzy, but it was. It was just like this wonderful energy. All these local people who really, really care about the fisheries and the social part of it, because it is social. I mean, and I'm going to tell the listeners this. Part of the fun, it was very fun. It was very intense. You were on a boat for 4 hours, and you have to concentrate. My boat was very serious. There was no joking around. I know some people, on other boats were more like, buddies fishing. My guys were very serious. No one had any beer. And as an observer, I had to be on the ball.
Right.
So because the minute you hook the fish, you had to record it and you had to call the judge, and it's pretty intense. But once you get back to the dock, especially at Whitting Dock, which for the listeners, this is like an old time fishing marina. It's kind of rickety and beautiful and rustic, and the bantering and the camaraderie and the wives come with their babies and everyone's sitting there when they pop champagne and they on the boat. It was just wonderful, that kind of sense of community that I was able to experience and witness. I was on the boat called the Blaze, his brother won the tournament, and they were just bantering back and forth, and it was just all in good humor,
A lot of back slapping.
Yeah, that was great, and then some guys said, "You're the reporter, we want to ask you a question," and I thought, oh my God, they're going to put me on the spot, and their issue was, one of our observers bought a banana on the boat, and it was just so fun. Never bring a banana on a boat if you're fishing because it's bad luck. I don't know why. It's an old wives' tale, but that is what it is. So even I knew that. Are you kidding me? You guys need to put that in the training manual.
That's one of those unspoken rules that you think that, everybody knows that. And it's funny because 10 days before our event, I was part of the Ultimate Shark Challenge, the Guy Harvey Ultimate Shark Challenge, where they tag and release sharks out of Punta Gorda. And I was an observer on that, and they had the Discovery Channel down there filming for portions of Shark Week, which is coming up in August, their 25th annual Shark Week. So we actually were boarded by the Discovery Channel team, and the sound man, gets on board, and we're off and tootling away from the ship that dropped them off, the research vessel. And this sound man reaches into his bag, and don't you know, he pulls out his banana and he starts peeling it. Well, the entire crew lost their mind and said, throw it overboard right now. And he was like, what? And he threw it over, and they said, don't you know what? So it's funny how, everybody knows, but nobody knows, about the banana. So, but it's kind of fun.
It's one of those things. One of my biggest takeaways from this experience that I want to share with my readers and listeners today is that of course it's about the fishing.
Yes.
But it's also about fishing culture and fishing conservation. And then when you get to meet these people and you see how hard the guides work and how much they know, like they intimately know, knowing the ocean and the water is just like knowing land. You have they know every inch of that path. And that takes time and experience to really get to that place. You know, it's not just about having a depth finder where you can see fish. They're salt of the earth, you know, and I love that. I absolutely love that kind of, that added such depth and richness to my experience of Boca Grande, that it wasn't like some kind of, oh, just throw the hook in the water and whatever. It was more than that. And that's what you know, if people want to participate in this tournament next year or they're curious about it, they need to know that it's not just about the fishing, but there's the festival part of it and the culture and the, you know, even just going down to the lighthouse, which is where you can see all the boats fishing, was great. You know, there's a little bit of history there, and it's a beautiful beach. I know you can't really swim in on the bend side because there's a strong current, but you can swim on the Gulf side.
Right.
And also just even preparing for the tournament, you know, the excitement, this anticipation, are we going to catch something? Maybe not. You know, you just never know, right? And then once you're out in the water, it's like a mating dance and all the boats are kind of
right, and that's true. You know, I think the preparation was just about as exciting because, like you said, you don't know what to expect. And, you know, especially with this tournament being dormant for so long, you know, you don't know if you're going to get that, welcome back. This historic tournament has returned, and that's exactly what the sentiment was. And, you know, I'm sure that it had something to do with the conservation component, but to bring up one other thing that you were talking about the kids, the educational component was key because you can talk about conservation all you want to other adults, but if you don't hit that next generation, you've got to start all over again from scratch. So we need to reach out to all ages, and absolutely those 9 and 10 year olds that were out there, they were not only, you know, learning about their environment, but they were also learning about conservation. They were also out there fishing for kids who are less fortunate, you know, for the Moffitt Cancer Research Center's Family First program. You know, they're learning so much more than just going out there like you point out and put a hook in the water. There's so much more to this culture.
And that's a great point. You know, I was at a blogger barbecue yesterday, and one of the women I spoke to is a mommy blogger, and she has teenagers, and she finally took them to Disney for the first time in 10 years, because they're in their 20s now, you know. And they've been taking their children to, like, Yosemite and, like, all the Grand Canyon, and the kids were bored. It's, you know, it's like, we want to go to Disney. We want to go to Disney. Because, and they finally went to Disney, and then, you know, so there's more that tourists and people in Florida can do than just go to Disney if they want to give their children rich experiences. Because if I had done this when I was 9 years old, I would have flipped over in happiness.
Right.
Because I love fishing as a little girl, but it was always usually from the beach or a bridge with the yo-yos, you know, the handlines.
Right.
With my dad, you know, that those were my early fishing experiences. So when I, the kids that won were actually from New York, right? And they, from upstate, they were not local. And I don't know if they came here specifically to do this, but their parents gave them, well then, there you go. I mean, what a great gift that a parent can give to a kid. And that gives back, because by investing in it, you're not only giving your children a great experience, but you're also, giving back to the community, you know, and supporting the cancer center and all of that. So, and how exciting to go up on stage and get your little trophy.
You know, it was great to see that last year too, and that was the first annual of the Gaspereau Island Kids Classic. So this year, you know, the second year, there were kids that were so excited that this was coming. They knew this was coming. And they gained an experience of a lifetime. I mean, there are some grown adults that come down here and go, man, I've never caught a tarpon. I want that experience. These kids are getting it at 8, 9, 10 years old. You know, you can't put a price on that.
And let me tell you, I don't know what kind of rigs or rods they were using, because, and I'm like, you know, I'm not huge, but I'm a big, sturdy girl, okay? And even handling that rod without a fish on it, it takes a lot of strength.
It sure does.
You know, it's not super heavy tackle, but it's not light tackle either. And so for those children to be out on the water and, I mean, potentially catching something that weighs like 4 more times than they do, it's pretty amazing, you know, that they get to experience that strength. You know, I mean, I've caught tarpon before, but more in the Everglades, more light tackle, backcountry kind of thing. But even then, you know, it's once you have a fish on the line, it's incredible. And then for a child to be able to experience that, I think it just gives them, you know, greater appreciation of nature and what's out there that's not like, you know, a video game or, I don't know, Xbox or whatever that stuff kids played. I don't even know.
No, you're right. It got them outside. It got them on the water. And I think we went a long way this year with the production of our magazine. First time that was ever done also. It started as your traditional program, because, you know, every fishing tournament you need a program and every event, but it became so much more once we started thinking about the mission and saying, you know, we really need people to walk away from this event. First of all, it has to rise to the level of the world's richest and that legacy. And like you said, we had to add the culture to it, and the history was put in there. But then when we started to add the articles about conservation and what it really means to this area and why it's important and what's at stake, I think people walked away with that magazine, and it was so much more than just a program. They walked away saying, wow, I was really at something. I was at an event. And more than that, there's more going on here. There's more that needs to be done. There's more that people need to learn about. And we need to get the word out there. Like I said before about my postings yesterday of these fish floating, you know, I had people screaming, you know, in the virtual world. How come I've never heard about this before? Well, you know, we're a teeny tiny place and a small island, and you know, you need a big voice to reach the mainland and to reach people who can actually make a difference. So now we have those voices together. You were here and immersed yourself in it, and thank you for that. I'm glad that you had the opportunity to do that, because you can help, and people like our friend Rob, who also was here to experience it, and Kathy, and, you know, all of those people who have a pretty strong reach and a far reach. And this magazine is making its way up to Washington, D.C. In the next 2 weeks. I got a request for it up there. So, I mean, that's some pretty strong reach.
Definitely.
So,
and I think that you know, one of my personal missions is not just like, you know, to go fishing as much as I can. But
there's nothing wrong with that mission, by the way.
but also, and enjoy all the beautiful, you know, tropical islands that Florida has to offer. But I want to give back, and say, you know, this is a sport, I admit it. You know, the best conservation is to not fish at all, but I like to fish. So how can we do this in a way that is as best as possible? Because once you, you know, you start fishing like I used to in the backcountry, you know, day in and day out, and you develop such a connection and love with the nature of the place. And one of the things I specifically really loved about Boca Grande was that even though you have the beautiful real estate and all those beautiful homes and all of that, you don't really see it. You know, like it's
right.
Still an island. There's no buildings. Most of the vegetation is native. You know, it's a place that feels very natural. It's very well taken care of in that respect. That there's no, you don't even have, everything is mom and pop business there, right? You have no franchises, nothing.
Right, that's
so good. It's very, like, it feels very old Florida. Even though it's sophisticated on many levels, you know, but there's no, it's beautiful houses, but there's not ostentatious. That's how I can only describe it. And conservation. I mean, at the end of the day, because if you love this sport, you want to conserve it. And you want to conserve it for others. And obviously, be a steward of the water and the things that live in it. So, whether, for, you know, I don't have children, but that doesn't matter. I care for the environment.
And that was going to be my point, too. Being a proper steward of the environment is key. You can take care of this. You can still have sport fishing and show that there's such a thing as responsible angling to protect it for future generations. There are ways that we can do it, and it means so much to our economy, which we also included in the magazine. When you factor in recreational fishing in Charlotte Harbor alone, equaling to $110 million, and that's by 2009 standards, and that's just for residential fishermen. That's not including tourism. Those are big dollars. Those are big dollars, and that needs to be preserved.
Well, tourism is obviously the major industry in the state of Florida.
Sure.
But there's ways of tourism that are, like, what I see, you know, like if I compare Boca Grande to Miami Beach, it's a completely different economy. You know, whereas you were making a living or generating dollars by fishing and conservation, you know, over there it's like nightclubs and, like, I don't know, cocaine drug use. Yeah, it's just a completely different economy and tourism that is, that I'm glad, you know, I'm glad that it generates income and hopefully comes back to the community to further more of these conservation efforts to keep it going in a way that will sustain it. You know, it's being sustainable.
As long as we can continue to get the word out there, Maria, and thank you for so much for helping with that. That's going to make all the difference in the world.
Well, it's my pleasure. I'm not even done. I mean, I still have to write my story. But that will be coming up on my blog very soon, and I have to process all my photos and talk about that. But I think, you know, you did, through myself and Bob and a few others that were involved, tweeting, you know, we had a Twitter hashtag for the tournament. I had a personal hashtag for this that people followed me in my adventures. And social media is a great way to get the word out.
You bet. And I learned that very early on and very quickly. And it's been great. I've been getting a lot of feedback on it. And we're going to change over our website, our worldsrichesttarpon.com website, we're going to move away from tournament mode from this year into conservation and education mode. And then probably 6 months down the road, we'll move back into the plans for next year. But the goal is always going to be conservation and education. That's the goal.
So, Lou, just to wrap up, what's the best time to visit Boca Grande, whether you fish or not?
I would say any time between January and December.
Well, that's like the whole year.
It is the whole year. That, now you got it. That's the perfect time to visit. There's something for every season here. And you will not walk away and say, gee, you know, I'm disappointed. There's no way that you can be.
But don't you have, like, some restaurants closed down in September?
We do. Sure.
Like most places.
We do, and those are the days that my wife and I get to walk our dogs down the center of the street, and we don't have to worry about getting hit by a car, or we might not even see another soul.
I don't know how you could possibly worry about that at all, any time of the year, because the worst that could happen is a golf cart hits you.
That's right.
It's incredibly liberating to ride that golf cart in the dark back to my hotel for, 4 miles?
Actually,
a golf cart path that is beautifully manicured, and when I went to I rented a golf cart at Boca Boca in the north section of the island, and the lovely lady behind the counter, I was asking all these questions. Are they worried? You know, is there going to be a crime or chupacabra if I come back at night? And she's like, are you from Miami? Yeah. She's like, no wonder. Nothing happens here.
No.
She's like, I'll just leave it there, you know, whatever. It really took a lot of adaptation for me. You know, by the time I left, I was finally getting used to not having this city energy around me, you know? And then, of course, I come back to Miami, and there's a story about this cannibal on the MacArthur Causeway. And it really just honed in the point on me, that Boca Grande really has this lovely island life, it seems, you know, that where I was just, okay, I trusted it, and I said, I'm going to drive that golf cart and not worry, and sure enough, I was fine.
Yes.
And so, it's just very relaxing. You know, I would definitely recommend it as a destination especially for Floridians, because you know what? It's going to be hot in the summer. Who cares? It might as well be hot there than somewhere else.
And oddly enough, we're 10 degrees cooler than the mainland. You know, we have that Gulf breeze. So there you go. Just when you think you've reached that level of paradise, there's one more extra bonus in it for you.
Well, great. And so how can we, can you just give us a couple of websites? So is it BocaGrandeChamber.com?
You bet. Go to BocaGrandeChamber.com. You can find out all kinds of history, all of our local businesses, accommodations. There's some great photos on there and links to all of our social media sites. And if you go to world's richest tarpon.com, which, as I said, in the next couple of weeks, you'll see change over from tournament mode and news to conservation and education. So we'll give you a little bit more insight as to what we're doing and why we're doing what we're doing and what's at stake.
Great. Well, Lou, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Maria.
I don't know if Tanya is still there.
I'm here. I'm posting stuff. I just posted the magazine.
Wonderful, Tanya.
Tanya,
we missed you today, but you know, yeah. As you know, I had a lot to talk about with Lou. So I know you were a good listener. I hope you feel better.
No, I will. But I was looking through the magazine. Very impressive. I just posted on our fan page.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Good. Thank you for that, Tanya.
And I was promoting all the stuff you guys were talking about. But yeah, I did a Google search. There is not a single article about tarpons being washed up to shore. Maybe we can change that.
I hope so. And we'll see. I think the tide is turning, no pun intended. And we'll get the word out there. But most importantly about conservation.
Well, I'll have the link to this podcast like in an hour. Not even like 30 minutes, Maria, and I'll send you the MP3 file.
Well, are you going to post it on social media today?
Yeah, I am, but I'm just going to give you, because it sounds really good. Today's show is fantastic. So I'm going to give you an MP3 also, so this way you can add it on. You know, this way Lou can use it too, so.
Fantastic. Thank you, Tanya.
And if you would post it to social chats today, that would be great. So we have an individual URL for it.
Oh, no, the MP3 will be an individual URL also. I created I'll show it to you. I've been working late at night on it. So it'll have its own separate file, but then it'll have another file with a little posting on it.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so there's two files, two URL that's I'm going to make out of this.
Well, thank you, Lou, so much for your time, and I hope to see you and other friends of Boca Grande sooner than next year, hopefully.
Absolutely, Maria. I hope so, too.
And Tanya, thank you for today.
No problem. You guys have a great day. Everyone have a great day. I probably won't podcast tomorrow, so I'm going to go get my voice back.
So you won't have a show tomorrow, Tanya?
Well, I'm going to be replaying an old show because I'm going to talk to Sandra, but I love my voice too much that now that I'm starting to lose it. So I want to keep it. So I'm going to keep it quiet. I'm going to keep myself quiet.
Now you got to take care of that.
Yeah, for me to be quiet for a long period of time, you know, that's hard. It's very hard.
Thank you, ladies.
Have a great day.
Thank you, Lou. Take care.
Take care. Okay. Bye, Maria.
Bye, Tanya. So, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. We're still live.
I'm going to be at Ignite Miami tonight. Okay. I know you probably can't make it, but I'm going to be at the stage, and I'm going to be doing a presentation on Top 10 Lies, the hashtag.
Oh, awesome.
And there's other great speakers, so.
And Gladys, isn't she going to be there from Hearts International?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, that I saw that. Yeah, I'm going to call you back because I want to talk to you about their retreat. Because I want to exhibit China Dent there, but I want to see if we can do something with social chats.
Oh, please do, because actually I'm going to be helping them with just call me back.
Yeah, I'm going to call you back, okay? Let me just go ahead and finish the upload the show.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Take care.